Support for the Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, working to support students, educators, and public schools as the center of their communities through the Public Schools Unite Us initiative. It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm David Gustino. With us this week is Susan Lerner, Executive Director of Common Cause New York. Susan has been on the program before many times over the years, really. Susan, welcome back to the Capital Connection.
Thank you for having me.
Great to have you here. I know you want to talk today about legislation that Albany passed this session, which authorizes New York to join ERIC. Tell us what ERIC is and why this is important.
So ERIC is the Electronic Registration Information Center. It is a nonprofit organization that was started by a number of states, actually at that time Republican states, to ensure that the voter rolls in their states were as accurate as possible. So, Dave, you know, people in the United States move all the time. People move within states. People move outside of states. And when you're trying to load that van and get your stuff to a new location for a new job or a new start in some way, you're not thinking about your voter registration. So people leave the state and they don't inform the Board of Elections, oh, I'm not going to be voting in New York anymore. I'm now living in Georgia. I'm now living in Kansas or California or wherever. And they get to their new location, and when there's an election, they just go ahead and they register. Without ERIC, there isn't a good way for the new state to tell the old state, take that person off your voter rolls. They're now registered in my state. So ERIC is a way for the states that are part of the consortium, and there are 24 of them now, to exchange voter information to clean up their voter rolls, to be sure that their voter rolls are accurate and only contain the names of people who are actually resident in the state and registered to vote. And, you know, New York's voter rolls have not been perfect. Nobody's voter rolls are perfect, but we've had some challenges in New York. And I know that the State Board strongly supports joining ERIC because it will allow them to have an effective way to be sure that our voter rolls are as accurate as we can make them.
In any way, are you worried about birthright citizenship and the idea of who would qualify and be eligible to vote in the future if that should go bye-bye?
Well, first of all, I don't believe that there's any way in which birthright citizenship can be simply disappeared. It is part of our U.S. Constitution, and in order to do away with it, you have to go through a really significant process of amending our Constitution. And quite frankly, Dave, I don't think that most people have any problem with the idea of birthright citizenship. It's been part of our law pretty much from the beginning. If you were born here, you are a citizen. So I'm not concerned in terms of what would happen with birthright citizenship. And the nice thing about ERIC is that every single state that is participating in ERIC has exactly the same interest, which is ensuring that their voter rolls are secure. So when they are providing information to ERIC to share with other states, the security level is extremely high, and that the information is protected and accurate. And every single state in ERIC has that exact same concern. And if New York joins ERIC, which we believe they should, we very much urge the governor to sign this bill sooner rather than later so we can have its protections in place for 2026. But once New York joins ERIC, they will be part of the governing body. Nothing will happen that the states themselves don't agree to, approve, and set up. It's run by the states for the states, and that gives me a pretty high level of confidence that they're taking extreme care to protect everybody's data.
We're speaking with Susan Lerner. She is the Executive Director of Common Cause New York, and you are listening to The Capital Connection. I'm David Gustina. Of course, you also advocate through Common Cause for an easier time for voters to vote. You know, voting by mail, early voting, voting drop boxes.
Yes.
Those efforts have been ongoing, obviously, but we see moves, mostly, it seems, by the Republican Party to curb voting in an effort to win elections.
Well, it's really unfortunate that, some people have, and some elected officials have completely lost sight of what our government is about, which is about fair representation for all of the people. And the way you get that is by having fair and secure elections, which is what generally we have in the United States. You know, Dave, the recent primaries are a perfect example of why we need the most recently adopted reforms that have brought New York's election into the 21st century. You know, let's look at the New York City primary. The New York City primary, on primary day, the temperature was going up to 100 degrees. If we had to force all of our voters through those polling places when it was 100 plus degrees, and some of them are not air conditioned, we would have had people fainting left and right, passing out for heat prostration, and the hospitals would have been full. Instead, because people knew the heat wave was happening, 40% of New York City's primary voters chose to take advantage of early voting. That makes for a much more efficiently, effectively administered election. The point of early voting is to spread voters over a longer period of time so that if there are some issues, they show up in early voting, they're solved, and we're not trying to shove millions and millions of people through a relatively limited number of polling places, which in New York, limited New York City, is over 1,200. But nevertheless, a million people through 1,200 locations is a lot of volume. And so we were really glad that we had early voting in place and people did not have to stand online on primary day in 100-degree weather and worry about just passing out from heat prostration. It makes for a better, calmer election.
Susan Lerner, two questions. First, the obvious follow-up. What about those that claim when you make it easier to vote, you also make it easier for fraud? Now, to my understanding, all studies by independent offices show that there really is very little fraud when it comes to voting. But what about that, the idea they should show ID and they'll stuff the drop boxes and all sorts of claims?
So we have really detailed protections in place in our election law in New York and, frankly, in every other state as well. People don't just sashay in, say, hey, I want to vote, and get to vote. There is a rigorous process of registration. People's eligibility is checked before they register. And, you know, what we have seen, quite frankly, Dave, if you wanted to steal an election, in-person at the polling place impersonation is about the least effective way to do it. So it doesn't make any sense that anybody would spend any time and effort to actually try and impersonate an actual voter. Very few people who tried to do it, and surprisingly, they all seem to have been Republicans, to show that the system was broken. They all got caught. They ended up being criminally charged. The system has a lot of checks and balances, a lot of ways to ensure that eligible citizens are voting, and that's what we see throughout New York and throughout the country.
The second question I have for you, Susan, is about the primary itself, because most people in the state are used to the normal way we vote, not ranked choice voting, which is different in New York. For the rest of our listeners, explain that. And do you think that should be expanded?
Well, actually, I do hope that we'll have a discussion about expanding it. And, you know, Dave, this, when you say the normal way to vote, this is the normal way to vote in Ireland. This is the normal way to vote in Australia. Our first past the post, you only choose one way to vote, is not universally the way in which people vote in every single country or in every single jurisdiction. We have two states and over 50 jurisdictions, municipalities that use ranked choice voting. And ranked choice voting is actually a very simple idea. And that is that when you have a multiplicity of candidates, which is a good thing. We want voters to have choices. Voters often find that they are on the horns of a dilemma. If you have a lot of candidates, what you'll hear from friends and family is, oh, you know, your favorite candidate doesn't have a chance to win. You shouldn't waste your vote on the person you really like. You should vote for the person who's most popular, even if they aren't your first choice. And in the winner-take-all system, that is a dilemma for you. Are you going to vote for the lesser of two evils, or are you going to vote for the person you really care about? And, of course, if you have multiple candidates from the same community, the community is also on the horns of a dilemma. If how are we going to elect somebody to represent our community if these three or four people are going to split our community's vote? Well, we should lean on this one or that one not to run so we don't split our vote. With ranked choice voting, where in New York City, voters have the opportunity to rank from 1 to 5 of their favorite candidates, you don't have to worry about wasting your vote. You don't have to worry about voting for the lesser of two evils. And you don't have to worry that your community's vote will be split. Because ranked choice voting allows you to vote for the candidates you really care about. And it allows candidates to run something that we don't see in the traditional first-past-the-post race, to run a coalition race to collaborate with other candidates who they agree on some, but rarely on all issues, and to really build a majority consensus winner rather than having somebody who wins with 41.9% of the vote. You'll get somebody who will win with over 50% of the votes that have been accumulated. So just like we naturally rank our favorite ice creams, we naturally rank our favorite vacation destinations, this allows voters more choice, more voice, and you get to rank your candidates.
She is Susan Lerner, Executive Director of Common Cause New York, joining us on this week's Capital Connection. I'm David Giustina. You know, that primary in New York, obviously, the winner is a Democratic Socialist, progressive, who made a connection with New Yorkers and came out on top in that primary against a former governor, Andrew Cuomo. The issue, though, for me, and I'm wondering how you feel about it, you hail from New York City, Susan, so this is your city, too. With such a progressive, if he wins the primary, that's Zohran Mamdani, wins the general, excuse me, and becomes the mayor of New York City, he's going to have it coming from the Trump administration, who doesn't like him already. He'll have it from more centrists in the party, and he's got to go to Albany hat in hand to get things done. Running that city is like running a country. It's huge, and there are a lot of issues. Would he be running uphill?
Well, I think anybody who is elected to be mayor of New York City right now is going to have a challenging time. But certainly, if he is the choice of New York City voters, then I would expect that the governor and the president would work with the mayor of New York City, whoever that person is, to help ensure that the city remains, which is a huge economic engine for the entire state and for the country, remains healthy and is able to address the relatively manageable problems that it's facing with the right approach and the right resources. So, you know, Dave, one thing about ranked choice voting is ranked choice voting is a tool, just like vote by mail is a tool. It doesn't favor any particular candidate or ideology. It is effective in the hands of a candidate who understands it and uses it correctly. And remember, the first ranked choice voting election elected Mayor Eric Adams. Now the primary winner is Zohran Mamdani, who showed that he and Comptroller Brad Lander both understood what is important about a ranked choice voting election, and models a type of coalition politics that I think most people would like to see flourish rather than endless backbiting and negativity in our campaigns.
Well, the issue will be how they handle the gigantic cuts coming from the federal government. And it's in every area. I mean, we're talking about Medicaid. You're talking about SNAP benefits. You're talking about environmental cuts, educational cuts, a tax on higher education, and those with the least getting even less. And that can't be good for a city like New York, which, as we know, is complex and has people of all stripes. So are many of these potential candidates, again, being set up for failure?
Well, you know, I think the kind of challenges that you're talking about are the sorts of issues that no one jurisdiction can face alone. I don't think any one city can address the sorts of seismic changes that we're seeing coming from the federal government. It's something which I hope our state government will focus on, that I hope that states will form consortiums to discuss how to fill in the gaps that are created when the federal government retreats in so many different areas, not just in the fiscal area. And so I think there needs to be an ongoing and statewide discussion among all the cities and with all of our state leaders and legislators as to how New York State will step up and protect its people and fill the gap when the federal government unfairly and surprisingly retreats from all of its obligations. So it isn't just the fiscal, to my mind, Dave. It really is a question of how states in a federalist system can now step up and fill the gaps. And I think that that's an ongoing discussion that we all need to be having, not just in New York City, but throughout New York State and in all of the states that believe that government has a role to protect its people and to do the best for the maximum number of people.
Well, you know, the public opinion on government is as low as a hound's belly. In many ways, that's where you, Common Cause, Nyberg, and others come in and say, hey, we need ethics reform, but real ethics reform. For me, I'll believe it when I see it. They're the lawmakers. Why would they hoist themselves on their own petard? But you have some interesting proposals. One I've certainly called for years, which is create a full-time legislature and ban outside income.
Yeah, absolutely. That has been our position for a really, really long time. Because remember, Dave, we also advocated for a raise for the legislature, counterintuitive
right.
to some people, I know. But we felt that, you know, number one, this should be a full-time job. You shouldn't have any side jobs going on. You should stay in session throughout the year. You should have a expert and well-paid staff. But that means that you should not have outside income. You have one employer, that is the people of the state of New York. They should pay you adequately, and you don't have any other concerns. So we're really very disappointed to see this continual fight on the part of primarily, unfortunately, it appears the Republicans in the legislature, that they just don't get the message. People elect leaders to be full-time leaders, not to be part-time lawyers, insurance agents, whatever. And then when times on my spare time, I'll collect a salary and I'll pass some laws. That's not the expectation of the people that they have been elected to represent. The people expect and deserve that they will be 100% public servants. That's why we call them public servants.
Yeah, well, and here's another potential slime creator, clean contracting in New York. We've had problems with this since the beginning of politics, you know, bid rigging, public-private partnerships in New York, and then who gets the contract back to that bid rigging. So the idea of clean contracting New York, you know, they took away most of the controller's powers to pre-audit. He hasn't really got any of that back, and he keeps complaining about it. That's Tom DiNapoli. So this is a real problem.
And it is absolutely a problem in any government procurement. We want government to have the money to do what it needs to do, to protect people, to build our bridges and our roads, to support our hospitals, but we want and our subways and bus lines, but we want that money to be spent efficiently and effectively. And in order to do that, you have to have clear procurement rules, but you also have to have an effective watchdog. And it's been very frustrating to see the comptroller's oversight powers cut back during the Cuomo administration. And all of the attempts to fix that legislatively not going forward. And that to me is inexplicable, because the taxpayers deserve to have an effective, aggressive watchdog who really is ensuring that the money is spent as it's supposed to be and only to the people who are going to do the work.
Yeah, and mandate the reporting, not only the reporting, but as you point out in your list of proposals, create uniform standards.
Well, we have fairly extensive requirements, but surprisingly, we're missing one really important part of the lobby disclosure. And that is, okay, you have to tell us how much you spent. You have to tell us who you talked to. You have to tell us what you talked to them about, but you don't have to tell us if you were for or against that. So, for instance, you go to another state. I was recently, I think it was on the Colorado legislative website, and I was looking at their lobby disclosures, and it lists who the lobbyist is, how much they spent, and the measure, whether they're supporting or opposing it. I mean, it's just common sense. Wouldn't you think that lobbyists would have to tell you, I talked to assembly member so-and-so in opposition to this bill? Our current disclosures are just, I talked to so-and-so, so-and-so, and so-and-so about this long list of bills. What did I say to them? Did I say I liked it? I was opposed to it? We don't know. So there definitely are things that can be done to make our lobby disclosures clearer and more useful. But we do have extensive lobby disclosures, and you can go to the COLEG website and look up how much money is being spent by whom, who's hiring whom, and what they're lobbying on. You can see how common cause. I'm a registered lobbyist. You can see who I'm talking to and what bills or issues I'm talking to them about, but you can't tell whether common cause supports or opposes the measures. And I think that's a major lack in our lobby reporting.
Another area we're lacking in, and it's very, very important for the distribution of resources, and that's the census, right? Not only the country census, but New York census. And getting it right is so very important. I'm worried because of what's happening in the area of immigration that we're seeing now and the fear that's spread across the country, whether we're going to end up with a problem. It's always hard to get certain folks to be counted. And the census, remember, is counting everyone, not every citizen, but every single person that's living in the country.
As it's required to constitutionally. But, you know, Dave, you also raise, you know, an important issue, which is the Trump administration is trying to change that requirement. They're trying to add citizenship questions. And there are measures in Congress, bizarrely enough, again, people who pay no attention to our U.S. Constitution, who want the census only to count citizens. And that is absolutely not what our census has been designed to do from the very beginning, right? From the 18th century on, we need to know how many people are in the country. We need to have accurate records so that we can take care of the people who are here. We can devise appropriate measures. So the planning has already begun, I believe, certainly at the local level and with the Census Bureau. The census is a huge undertaking every 10 years, and we in the good government community and the people who talk to their communities and the various folks who are involved in the process have already begun the discussions about what do we need to do to ensure that the census in 2030 is as complete as we need it to be. You know, every level of government has a really important role to play in the census process, and all community organizations have a very important role to play to ensure that all the members of their community understand how important it is to reply to the census forms, to actually get online or answer the mail and have yourself be counted. And that requires real resources. And it was really sad to see in 2020 that there was a solid appropriation for the census work that was made at the state level. And for whatever reason, then Governor Cuomo decided not to release the money. And the state started its census work months and months and months behind the timetable that everybody expected them to because the governor didn't release the money. I still don't understand why that happened. And you remember, Dave, New York ended up losing a member of Congress because it had 89 fewer people counted than the next state. 89. I really fault that late start, and we can't have that happen again in 2030. So all of the groups that were involved in the census are already focused on what we need to do to ensure that the count is as full and accurate as everybody can make it.
I'm afraid we're out of time. She is Susan Lerner, the Executive Director of Common Cause New York. Susan, I can't thank you enough for taking the time to talk with us about these important issues. And you know, we'll get you back in the future to talk some more.
Dave, it is always a pleasure. As you know, this is really important stuff that it's easy to overlook. And so I really appreciate the opportunity to talk about it.
Thank you. Support for the Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, working to support students, educators, and public schools as the center of their communities through the Public Schools Unite Us initiative. We'll be right back.